Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show. Later on, we have Paul Tubby Lane from NASCAR Circles and Margaret Gray, who has published a new book to talk about her work. And this is the evil stepfather, Phil Hendry. I've got four stepkids. And one of the things that I've enjoyed since I've been married and since I've had the stepkids is learning that when you're under the age of 18, you have to do what I tell you to do. And that's fun. The other thing is seeing it from the other side. When I was 14, 15, 16, I believed that I was now ready to move into the world. I was totally ready to move out, purchase things, eat the food that I wanted to eat, do the things I wanted to do. And that's what every kid believes, but you're not. You're not ready, and part of the reason why adults are such complete and utter slobs and they're tough to live with. Did we really get a complaint about using the a-hole word on the air from Eugene, Oregon? We did, because I was just about to lay it out there again, and I realized, well, Eugene got upset about it, so I'm going to keep it cool until they drop the show. Now, so here's what happens. You're 15 or 16 or 17, and you want to do something, and you are not allowed to do that, and you get angry because you're old enough to know how to do it, and the adult says, yeah, but you don't understand. If you don't do it right, we're the ones that get sued, not you. It's like what I said to my son when he got popped for driving, you know, 81 miles an hour in a 25 hospital zone. I said, understand, man, I'm not angry. I recognize that you're 16 and you're going to go fast in a car. That's not the question. The question here is you being smart and knowing that if you screw up, then every nickel that I make from now until the day I die will go to the family of the person that you killed. And he gets that, you know. I mean, I know I would love to be able to treat you like an adult, but I can't do that. The law doesn't allow me to do that. Now, down in Georgia, you may have heard this story. It's no big thing. Just a little story about a prom that's an all-white-only prom. It's a private one. I got no problem with that. You want to have a private all-white-only prom? That's fine. They used to have those in the South all the time. They didn't like the coloreds mixing with the whites, as they used to say in those days. Now many of the schools are integrated, but they, for some reason, in this high school, Taylor County High, the students have, now listen to the phrase I'm going to use here. The students have decided to hold an all-white prom. The students decided to have an all-white prom. Now, since when do punk kids of 16 and 17 decide jack squat about anything without an adult saying, here's what may be right and here's what may be wrong? Was I asleep the last 90 million years? Some kids, and they're good. I say punk kid with all due respect, but that's what you are, man. When you're 16, 17, you're a punk kid. You don't know the first thing about how to function in this world. I know you believe you do, but you don't. Now you got these kids down there in Columbus, Georgia. They're going to have an all-white prom, which is what kids, I guess, will decide to do. Now, where are the adults? Or are there any adults down there? Or are they all just big kids? You know, if you're an adult, I don't know, if you're any kind of a real adult, if you're any kind of a real human being, you go to these kids and you say, look, this is no good. What do you mean a whites-only prom? Get your freaking tux on, get your dress on, and get your ass down to the prom at your school, and get your ass back here by midnight, 1 o'clock because it's your prom, and don't bother me. Get out of here. Wheel of Fortune's coming on, and I don't want to see your ugly face till midnight. You're not having an all-white prom. You and your friends are going to go down there with all the coloreds and all of the Asians. Everybody, go. There isn't an adult saying that down there, though. Isn't that interesting? You want to know why? Because they're all a bunch of freaking crackers like their kids. That's why. So they're going to have an all-white prom. I just think it's a classic example of what the hell goes wrong in families and in individuals. You got to learn it from somebody, and by God, they're learning it down there from their parents. They're going to have an all-white prom because that seems to be the thing to do. Let me tell you, you white boys down there, you don't know what you're missing. I've had a number of black girlfriends, and you don't know what you're missing. You dumb white boy, you. I married a white girl, but that's beside the point. Hey, look, you know, there are social questions. There are certain things. Well, my last African-American girlfriend ran up quite a charge on my MasterCard, so I... Anyway, but it was good stuff. It was Victoria's Secret. Anyway, so what is it with the adults down there? Well, they don't exist. They're going to let the kids do whatever the hell they want to do. Well, adults do that, see? But not around my house. Let me tell you how I deal with this one. My son comes in and says, we're having an all-white prom. Oh, yeah? Yeah, because we just don't want to have to be in an integrated prom. Oh, really? That's interesting. Yeah. So we're going to have it over at the, over here at the Spritz house. And, well, guess what? What? You're not having any all-white prom. You're going over to the integrated one. Well, we've decided. I don't care what you decided. Here, I just decided to put my boot in your ass. How do you like that? That's what an adult does. That's what our job is. Now, when they hit 18, and believe me, when you hit 18, you still got plenty of young things to do. You can drink, puke, spend all your money, drive your car into a palm tree at about 80 miles an hour. You can do anything you want when you're 18. There's nothing that anybody can tell you about. Nothing anybody's going to do about it. You can go out and get hammered. My son can't wait till he turns 18. We're going to take a cruise down to the Bahamas, and he's relishing the moment that he passes out dead drunk in a bar, and I got to carry him back to the freaking hotel room. He thinks that's great. But when you're under 18, you are a kid, and somewhere, God help you if you don't, but somewhere you got to have a responsible adult that points you in the right direction somehow, some way. So since you guys down there in Columbus don't have any responsible adults around, they're at the Taylor County, whatever the hell it's called, high school in Georgia, let me be the responsible adult. Why don't you get off of your high horse, pull your heads out of your asses, and go to your integrated prom at the school, and be a part of your school, be a part of your community, be a good citizen, and don't be some cracker in training. Since you don't have any adults in Columbus, Georgia, to tell you right from wrong, allow this disembodied voice from the West Coast, that's right, where all the fags live, where all the coloreds and the fags live. I'm out here on the West Coast, and let me tell you what the right thing to do is. The right thing to do is to be a man and go to your integrated prom and stand there and have a good time with your friends of all colors, and then come home, and if your parents don't like it, tell them where to stick it. They can call me. Respectfully decline their advice. How about that? Good. I'm glad I got that out of my system. I've been wanting to talk about this for 2 days since the thing came up, and I hadn't heard anybody really mention anything about it. And like I said, not a big deal, but I'm very big on being a responsible parent. It's just something that I'm really with, you know, I really get it. And one of the reasons why is if you're a stepdad and you let one of your kids die, they'll always believe that you did it. That's if you're a stepdad. So you are doubly vigilant with the kids. If one of the kids ever died in my possession, like when Maria was out someplace and the kids were at home with me, there wouldn't be any place I could run to. No deserted island I could find. She'd find me and she'd execute me. I'd be on my knees with my hands tied behind my back, and you'd find me pitched face forward, execution style. And just look for Maria Sanchez. She did it. So you're really doubly aware of what you got to be as a parent. And the first thing you got to be as a parent is you got to stand there like a man or a woman and give them an example of manhood and womanhood. That's the number one thing. Give them an example of being a man or a woman. And what is that? That is somebody who tempers justice and mercy and intelligence and right living, somehow synthesizes the whole thing, and, demonstrates it daily in their life. They don't talk about it, they do it. That's what you do when you're a real responsible adult, a real responsible parent, and not some cracker sending your kids off to the all-white prom. So since there isn't anybody down there in Columbus, Georgia, man or woman enough to do that for their kids, I had to do it. And I got four of my own. Ain't I something? All right, 1-800-449-8686. Now, we have a souvenir shop on the Phil Henry Show website. You should get a souvenir there from our souvenir shop for Mother's Day, Father's Day, or just to say, hey, I heard you today on the air, Phil, and boy, you must really need the money. So here, I'm going to buy a black and white coffee or latte mug, or how about the Citizens Auxiliary Police travel mug, or the Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt. It's all there. And if you click on each one of those, you'll find a store with other select items as well, including our spa robe from Western Estates. It's philhenryshow.com. That's the website. Get a backstage pass, philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686. And now more on the Phil Henry Show.
It's time now for Phil Solves Your Neighborhood Problems. Each week we get an email from one of our listeners telling us about problems they have on the street and how we can help you out, our listener, because we care about you, and nobody is going to mess with you, our listener. We'll stand up for you. We'll stand tall. We'll back you up. You know, fans of the Phil Henry Show should band together. Everybody band together now, because nobody's going to mess with the Phil Henry guys, whatever the hell you want to call yourselves. All right? Now, here's the letter. This comes to us from Stacy Cohen. And she's in Los Angeles. It says, hi, please read this story that was in the Easy Reader, which is a newspaper, here in Redondo Beach, California. Our neighbors stole our cow. This is a show for Phil. Our neighbors hate us because I have three boys that play in a band in the garage of our house. They also hate us because our dog Hollywood scares the heck out of them when they walk by. Sometimes we water the lawn, and they say we are ruining their fence by getting it wet. So one day I decided at the spur of the moment to buy this pink, life-size cow with yellow spots on it. I love the cow, and so do my kids. I'm a single mom of three boys, 15, 13, and 11. We put the cow in the front yard, and the neighbor across the street asked me how much it would take to move it to the backyard. I said, no frickin' way. The cow cost a lot, and I won't move it. So he said he is trying to sell his house, and his real estate agent said he won't be able to sell it if the cow is across the street. One night last week, our cow, which weighs over 200 pounds, was gone when we woke up. The neighbors pretend they don't know, but we know they took the cow somewhere. Help us find the cow. Thank you, Stacy Cohen. And she gives our phone number, or gives her phone number, I should say. Well, Stacy, we read your letter, and we're grateful that you sent it to us, because number one, if your kids were playing in a garage and playing in a band next to my house, I'd probably firebomb your garage. And secondly, your dog Hollywood scares the hell out of them. Well, that's called a pit bull, and they kill people. So I'd kill your dog, probably with a handgun. Now, as far as the cow goes, if it had been on your front lawn in front of my house, well, let's just say hand grenades do a great job. You see, Stacy, white trash is not something that goes a long way towards selling homes in an area. And if I needed to sell a house, yeah, I'd want your cow gone too. Although I'm not sure which cow he was referring to. In short, take this letter and your cow and park it. All right, that's neighborhood problems. All right, Stace, good luck with your cow. Our dog scares the hell out of them. Somebody's going to shoot your dog, Stace. And as far as your band, that garage band of your brother, teach him how to play guitar, maybe tuning the instruments. Jesus. Oh, hey, the Dixie Chicks. Welcome to the Taylor County High Prom. Hi, everybody. I'm Biff Biverson, your local top 40 disc jockey. Let's make sure there's only white people in here.
Yeah, Biff!
All right. Well, thank you, thank you. Now, let's bring on the Sorghum Sisters to sing a little song about how life begins even before you're born. Here they are with Don't Touch That Fetus Just Because It Looks Like Dessert. Thank you, Ray. And we'll see those boys over there at the Opry tomorrow night. And they have always been entertaining every time they come into Nashville. Okay, it's about 22 minutes after the hour, and my name is Wayne Jugwright, and got a letter here from a little girl who has come out to a lot of our local broadcasts from Sherman Ford and over at the Getty Center. And, of course, we're going to be over at the Sadler Hay and Feed next week. I'm reading this letter because she has very large breasts, and I like seeing her at all the remotes, especially when she pushes up against the glass. I get all crazy. My wife, who suffers from spina bifida, she's not much for me and can't get out of the chair anymore, so it's frustrating to sit here as a disc jockey and having all the adulation of all, especially young girls, 14, 15, not hardly legal, but that don't stop me, never has, never will. So I'd like to see y'all come out next week when we're at the Taylor Feed and Grain Show. And that'll also include, of course, our Blue Ribbon judging of the hamsters. And some of you folks, before you eat that guinea pig, let us judge it. Howdy, friends. You know, guinea pigs make great sandwich meat. Hi, everybody. This is Dick Wiener for guinea pig sandwich meat. I know so many of you out there love to breed those guinea pigs. Bring that to the state fair. Of course, I love to have that deep-fried hot dog. Man, last time I had a hot dog deep-fried, well, I married her. Now, let me tell you this. You take those guinea pigs, and you bring them all over here to the rendering plant. We'll turn them into the nicest, sweetest, thinly sliced guinea pig meat you've ever had for a sandwich. Yes, it's new guinea spread. New from guinea pig meat. All right. Thanks so much, Buck. You are one sick bastard. You know, I saw him crawling through my bedroom window last night, and I thought, why kill him, you know? And she'll think it's me anyway. All right, don't forget to sign up for our bus trip to see Dirk Kinnam perform at Hughes Tire Town. Dirk, of course, is coming out with a new CD. It's called Everything I Had Is Now Lost, So I Sort of Drag My Left Leg. Now, Dirk has that new CD coming out. It's called Sure I Took a Grenade to the Face in Vietnam, But Honey, Wait Till You See Me Now. Anyway, it's something. I don't know what it's called. They haven't named it yet. I'm just making things up here, folks. Now let's get to the Durham County News. Two men were found having sex in a public restroom yesterday. One of them was the mayor of our town, and so he was released on his own recognizance. Well, hell, I can't pronounce it. And now here's Mary Brown with our country tip of the day. Mary?
Thank you. Have you ever made love in front of a fireplace, on a secluded island beach, in the backyard under the stars? Most of us, when we make love in the backyard, it's under the porch. I can't see the stars where I live because I live in a holler.
Well, all this white trash beating and beating up and all this stereotyping of the white folks who live down in the canyon is going to have to come to an end. I'm Dirk Durkham, wishing all of you just, I hope you all rot in hell. All right, let's go to Benji Neeson now. Benji has the traffic. Benji?
Gonna go see the table. Everybody go home. Everybody go home.
That's how we do the traffic here in the holler. We just tell you to go home. All right, time for everybody to go home. Now here's Reverend Pritchard. Reverend, how are you?
Very good, and today's good news is this. They have canceled my show. It was on Sunday night at 5:30, and they're going to have the polka parade instead. Now, Bill Gunderson, who owns a radio station, I thought was a very good friend of mine. I'd had him over for Sunday supper. That lying, no-good homosexual bastard has canceled my radio broadcast. Jesus, look at that. They cut my line.
Well, it is true the owner of the station's a homosexual, but I don't know what that's got to do with your lousy show. And your mic technique sucks.
Here's a news alert. Mary Dartworth lost her tablecloth during a windstorm last night, and it wound up on Yasser Arafat's head.
That's been Country Corner with the jokes. All right, we got a split now. Our sponsors would like to tell you all about some newfangled products that are going to help you grow some hair back on your legs, because a lot of you live in that portion of the holler where there was some testing about 5 years ago, and who knows what they dumped there. But one of the kids there has one ear larger than the other, and it's most of you are inbred and look sick to begin with, but this is ridiculous. Phil Henry Show, coming back.
1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
You're listening to The Phil Henry Show!
Las sociedad intacto de síndole y al alcalde de los sudos que tengan al túnel, la rinde, mugala de tijaca, rabota de Bagdad de Montagari de Tikrit, no sé si se acaso en la boda de Shush, ni el gol de Andre. Lego de Dusne, boda cada anduli, boda de Siki, que anda todo el rub, boda de Dagro Rine, boda cada dieti.
Ada boda, ada tu cotisi.
Un raro potuto. Codete, nada carrizi, nada si, donita. Rubicate, rica da bolsitate. So, arrivo dopo su 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 che si tolse?
Con l'altro si può data?
Non è?
Può!
Oh, che dato tu, cara, tu hai uscito, bre!
Guarda, per dar sì, si tolse, te, te!
Guarda, Grover, muti che era tipo, sai?
Se si sto a sentire, fin d'agon. L'agon di fissa a sentire.
Dago na yisi se, yo na di bore, e grodo o ru, e moto kotor yise, tu no mene?
Di na mo nam dira hara, no si 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 ma.
Do na mene?
Do na mene.
Vale. E, do se son ga, ru ka rima ci sana. Kala kala.
Ano, suga da wata.
Grove.
Waka wotu yi shi shi puri, si si ya, dara wa che, che, che.
Da, get out of here. Muri gira vi si 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 ma na chifu da che.
Vale, fed.
Budan si na, no, 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 no,
Bahanda.
Well,
No, he got done it, Rodana.
Do he got that? Yes, 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 yes,
yes,
yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes,
yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes, yes,
yes, yes, yes,
E lui, le luna garasi. Da su, gli vada tanta, le amo cuore. La cuore?
Con la prece.
La guadà.
La vicina dei due.
La huron, dragata.
Mugata, blu bodaga, waga nunu.
Bugu.
Bugalu.
Lagonu. Isita la no la liwa. Okay, what I would see another one then. La garbuchi si solo de verse. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
I can't believe that you needed a drink to get you through the 4-H club. Exhibit. Thank God you didn't have to, go cover the
I think animals being abused is traumatic.
Yeah, that you're looking for an excuse to drink, and they have a place you can go for that. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. I cover accidents every day. That's what I do. Is deal fatalities every day.
What do you do? What do you do, sir?
From a professional standpoint,
what do you do?
What do
you do?
What do I do? I do my job. I go in.
No, what is your profession? What is your profession?
I'm an accident investigator for a trucking company.
Well, have you ever seen a flock of sheep being paraded off to market by a 10-year-old child? Do you think that that's something you could keep your... You know something? You may find it very humorous, Johnny, but if I report to people, you don't have to...
You are a gentleman looking for an excuse to drink. It's okay for you, but hey, the rest of the world...
It is necessary for me to drink and drive.
Necessary for the LAPD to pull you over and arrest you for DUI. I can't believe that the station would condone a person like you.
I'm not necessarily condoning this. I think that what, Mr. Berman, what you're saying is that you don't like kids drinking and driving, but some professions need it.
I have to. When I'm racing to the scene where a child has been burned, third-degree burns, I need to take a couple of blasts. Wouldn't you?
the same thing for the billy goat with the, you know, with the blue bonnet on for winning? I mean, geez, you know.
All right,
I
got a story here. You were covering. I'm sorry, but you were covering a double accident. It was two deaths in an accident on the Hollywood Freeway that you went to the scene of. This was back in April.
Phil, this story has been reported and debunked.
All right, but it's. Did you run over two of the body bags?
Oh my God!
Did you run over two of the body bags?
When I got to the scene, the sheriff had laid those body bags in an area that was unsafe.
You ran over two dead bodies.
Yes, and can I underline the word dead? I didn't kill anyone. I don't know what the gentleman's laughing at, but I can tell you that I went through no end of crap dealing with that for 3 months.
Well, were
you arrested?
Arrested for what? Hit and run on a dead body?
Well, obviously you slammed a couple back before you got there. I mean, you know.
Yes, so who's to know?
Was there any sign of any improprieties of your drinking?
You know, I can hear the laugh in your voice, and it's pissing me off.
And, Wait a second.
Quite frankly, you're pissing me off.
I'm pissing you off.
I'm out here trying to protect people.
I didn't.
And you're the guy who's out there, you know, running over kids.
I didn't run over any children. I ran over two body bags with dead bodies in them.
Jesus.
All right,
listen. Thank you very much.
I had to wipe the tears from my eyes when I pulled up to the scene, and they were blocking my vision. And so that was difficult for me to see.
Well, the sheriff said you pulled up, the car fishtailed, and it went over two body bags with bodies in them.
Yeah, so what's your point?
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold.
All right, so that's Comedy Gold. You can also check that out on our website, philhendryshow.com. That's our website. And we add new classic clips every single day. 1-800-449-868. What? David, hi.
Yeah, I was listening to the show coming over, and I want to ask you a question.
Yeah?
What were you doing about 10 minutes ago?
I was doing like I was on, doing Arabian Radio.
Yeah. You were doing like you were on doing Arabian Radio. So in other words, you come into the show every day now, and you're just like 8 years old. Is that it?
You know, I'm on the air right now.
I know you're on the air, but when am I supposed to talk to you about this stuff? You're on the air right now. I'm driving over here listening to you. Talking like this. What the hell is that? Is that radio broadcasting?
I was just doing a kind of a shtick thing about what it might sound like, I don't know, on an Arab radio station with belly dance music.
What it might sound like? What is it with you anyway, Phil? You know, here's the thing. Let me just...
Look, are we going to break down my personality again in front of my entire audience?
Yeah, that's what we're going to do. I'm over here trying to have a relaxing day, trying to get some work done, and you're sitting there...
Trying to get some work done. You sound like you're at Santa Anita.
Never mind where I am. I'm not at Santa Anita.
Well, then how come I can hear a guy calling a race?
Wait a second. Just so we're clear, are you interrogating me?
I can hear a guy calling a race behind you.
I don't know. It's a TV somebody's got on. Let me tell you something. I want you... You know, ever since you got that... ever since the Iraq war broke out, you start telling people what to do and how to live. You're rapping about that television show of yours. You know, you said it. You ain't going to get that TV show.
I know I'm not going to get the TV show.
And then you'll be stuck back in radio. Then what are you going to do? Are you going to do more of this? You're going to do more of that?
I thought it was funny, okay? You're telling me it wasn't funny?
Not only was it not funny, it was interminable. It went on and on and on.
Who's winning the race?
I'm not at the racetrack.
Then why do I hear that?
Someone's got a radio on. Let me tell you something else. That bit you did the other day about women taking clothes and not returning them with the tag, and what was that about?
It was a bit about how some women buy outfits to wear them for one night, and then they bring them back.
Nobody ever heard about that, ever.
Well, my wife has told me about girls that she knows. Janice knows girls.
I don't care who they know. Nobody in your audience knows anything about that. What is that? And you're talking about Iraq. What are you all of a sudden a big pro-war guy? Let me tell you what. You keep it up, and they'll shut you up like they shut that guy Sheen up.
They never shut up Sheen. And nobody at NBC ever told me to say anything or not say anything. They haven't said anything to Martin Sheen either.
Oh, yeah? Who said so?
I do. I bet you they haven't said a word to him.
You keep that war talk up, and they're going to string you up like Mussolini in that gas station. And quit it with the bitch with the... Is that it because you can't write any jokes anymore? I'm telling you, Phil, you're on thin ice.
I'm sorry, I gotta get... what do you want me to...
I'll tell you when to get back to the show. You're on thin ice. Now try and go and do something funny.
All right.
Goodbye.
It's embarrassing for me, and I'm sorry that you have to hear it as well. That was David Hall, my boss, vice president of syndication for the show. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
You guys into roller coasters? I like them. Unfortunately, I can't do curly cues too much. I can't do the corkscrew stuff, man. I get like my inner ear goes... I can't stand up straight. I don't mind fast. I don't mind high. But I can't do upside down for some reason. In any event, a brand new roller coaster is opening on Sunday at in Sandusky, Ohio, called the Top Thrill Dragster. This thing reaches a top point of 420 feet. And let me tell you how big that is. The Statue of Liberty is only 305 feet. So it goes over 100 feet higher than the Statue of Liberty. And I will explain this ride to you because this thing sounds unbelievable. First of all, you get on board. Then the train rolls forward, then waits for a launch cable to attach. The launch cable, powered by 32 hydraulic motors using compressed nitrogen, blasts the train to 120 miles per hour in 4 seconds. You're in a little car on a roller coaster, man. You're 120, like that California Screamin' out there at California Adventure. Gets up to like 70 miles an hour in 4 seconds. 120 in 4 seconds. A real dragster reaches 100 miles per hour in 0.8 seconds. So you're approaching some serious speed there. The launch cable then disengages, and then the hydraulics continue to build, and the train begins to make its upward arc on this huge loop. The train makes a broad turn skyward. In 1 second, it's facing straight up. So you're basically on your back as you're heading up. As it approaches the top, the train now twists 90 degrees. So now you're heading up to 420 feet, twisting 90 degrees. As the train rounds the ride's 420-foot peak, passengers in the rear get airtime, a feeling of weightlessness that coaster fans covet. And if you've ever felt it, I've felt it. It's spooky. When you're up that high and you're out of your seat and you ain't coming down... Dude, it is spooky. It's like you're completely out of control in a lot of ways. It's like, you know what, I'm leaving this roller coaster now. I'm going into outer space or something's going to happen here. Number 8, the train then plunges straight down while spiraling 270 degrees. For riders, it feels like a free fall. Ah! Oh! Then it comes all the way down, leveling off. The train goes through two braking phases as it approaches the station. And then there's a safety zones, two train lengths long, mark the end of the ride, and then the train unloads. Now, how long is this ride is what I'd like to find out. The Dragster has six trains. That's why they call it a train. It has six trains, which is just basically the coaster carts connected together. While one is launching, the other are in the station preparing to launch up to 2,800 foot long, up to 2,800 foot long track. When the park is busy, a train can launch every 30 seconds, allowing 1,500 people an hour to ride. Now, the Top Thrill Dragster in Sandusky, Ohio, reaches top speeds of 120 miles an hour. The next fastest roller coaster is one called Dodonpa Fujiyoshida in Japan, 107 miles an hour. There's the Steel Dragon in Miel, Japan, which is 95 miles an hour. There's the Millennium Force in Sandusky, Ohio, which is 92. And then out here in California at Six Flags, Goliath goes 85. And Goliath is the big wooden coaster? No, that's Colossus. So get a load of that. Each train consists of five connecting cars and holds up to 16 people. They're designed to look like real dragsters. So it looks like a real dragster. It's got big meats on the back with the spoiler. No dragster ever did this. Unless you've lost complete control of the dragster and you're about to die, thing spirals 90 degrees and then comes down 270 degrees. High back seats use three types of restraints, headrest, T-bar lap restraints that lock into place, and then seat belts. Two-phase braking. They have magnets attached to the track that slow the train without touching it. They interact with magnets attached to the train. As the train is slowing, mechanical brakes kick in, bringing riders to a complete stop. The wheels, three sets of wheels, keep the train on the track even if one set fails. Hate to have that thing fail, man, at 420 feet. Boy, that's beautiful. And they got a photograph of it here. It's called the Top Thrill Dragster in Sandusky, Ohio. Unreal. What's the fast? Have you been on the one out there? What's the one in Vegas? Well, have you been on the one at State Line? The one at State Line is brutal. What's the one in Vegas? They got one in New York, New York? It's what? Turn her mic up because I can't hear. What is it, Janice? Oh, the Stratosphere is frightening because it's at the very top of that hotel. It's at the it's on the. Who wants to get on a roller coaster 86 miles in the air? You gotta be. It's a death wish. I got a fear of heights, and I can fly on airplanes, and I can go on roller coasters, but I can't go on a roller coaster that's already 120 feet up, and then it starts. Can't do it. All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, we've got Paul Tubby Lane about NASCAR.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
We're going to talk automobile racing with Paul Tubby Lane, but not just automobile racing, promoting auto racing and NASCAR. Paul is a former driver on the NASCAR circuit. You're now in promotions, Paul. What is Dinner with a Driver? Is this something you have going with NASCAR?
Not yet, Phil, but we are hoping to have NASCAR come on board with us.
What is Dinner with a Driver?
Well, we've identified it's a great opportunity, I think, to make a dream come true for the guys out there who would... The NASCAR racing fan would like to spend an entire evening talking racing or whatever else with your favorite driver. We call it Dinner with a Driver, and we'd like to offer an opportunity to have dinner with a NASCAR driver of your choice. You can get away from the wife and kids and just be sort of man-to-man talking racing with one of these guys that you admire so much.
So this is something for the men out there who like NASCAR racing and want to talk to. Is it for aspiring drivers?
It could be for aspiring drivers, people who want to learn a little bit more about it. But more, really what we'd like to try and do is put together Jeff Gordon with his fans and put together Dale Earnhardt Jr. and put together Dale Jarrett and these kinds of guys, Mark Martin or whoever, and put them together with the fans, the racing fans out there, the men who are, you know, getting away from the wife and kids and whatever, and the workaday and all these things, and just two guys talking racing, you the fan and the driver of your choice.
All right. So you don't yet have this hooked up with NASCAR?
We do not yet, but we are doing some research on it, and all preliminary indications are it's going to be a great promotion.
Tell me about it, and how do you enter?
Well, there will be entry forms at auto parts stores, entry forms at race venues throughout the United States, where you can sign up to be involved in a drawing to have dinner with a driver. We'll choose a dinner with a driver winner every month, so every month there'll be a driver going out to have dinner with one of his racing buddies. The beauty of this, I think, Phil, is that you don't have to just stand in line for an autograph. You can be there one-on-one, getting the undivided attention of your favorite driver.
This contest is for men only?
That is correct, right.
So tell me about what is the prize consist of, dinner?
Well, what you do is, if you win, the evening starts out, we pick you and the driver up in a limo, and then you're chauffeured over to the Barclay restaurant in Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, if you live out of town, obviously, we'll fly you into Charlotte. This is a 5-star steak and seafood restaurant in Charlotte. It's right on the beach, and you get a premier table, and you and the NASCAR driver of your choice can talk racing and watch the sunset. You can select from a wine list that includes over 300 different domestic and foreign wines, and you can get inside the head of your favorite driver in a setting like that, the driving techniques, his favorite races, while you're still enjoying a candlelit dinner and having a good meal.
And so it's the two guys having dinner, talking racing.
That's right, because recognizing again the special bond a male driver and a fan has. So we give the guys a night away from the wife and the driver. He wants to get away from all the domestic stuff and talk racing man-to-man, too. You can look at Jeff Gordon. Here's a guy, he's got a lot of female fans, but I can imagine he'll sign up to get the chance to sit there and be with a male fan for a change after dinner, sit and talk. Then the limousine will take you to a beautiful beach. It's called Hunters Point Beach, North Carolina. And here is where I think dinner with a driver is exciting. The chauffeur will lay out a blanket on the beach, and here's where you can talk racing and not be disturbed. It's a great beach to walk on and talk racing theory, and then he'll set up some after-dinner drinks on and some dessert for you on the blanket.
Now, just as a question, the chauffeur is like what, is a butler or something?
Well, no, the chauffeur driver is a member of the task crew. He's a member of the, I guess what you'd call our hostess party. So not only is he driving you, but he's setting up the drinks. And so you and the NASCAR driver of your choice can sit on a blanket and talk racing.
All right, I think this is a good idea. But I think there's elements there. These are two men having time together, which is great, but why the blanket on the beach, I guess?
No, I understand, Phil, and I know a lot of people misunderstand that. The NASCAR male fan and the NASCAR driver,
right?
They just want to have time to talk racing and not have some woman or girlfriend interrupted. Slower, so you can go to the beach or you can walk on the sand and talk racing, and you can then go back to the driver's hotel is part of it and talk racing. Now, people will laugh at that. They say this has to do with sex. It has nothing at all to do. That's just the passion that the fan has.
So the NASCAR fan is obviously a very informed fan, wants to talk racing.
Wants to talk racing.
But, okay, so he's, after you sit on the beach, then you go back to the driver's hotel?
That is correct, yes, sir. And again, people snicker at that, but it has nothing to do with anything. It's just two people want to talk racing, and you might as well spend the night or whatever in the hotel room with the driver.
What if I don't want to do that?
Well, you don't have to, but there's nothing wrong with it. Okay, see, you have a preconception, Phil, that you need to get out of your head. NASCAR fans are that passionate that they want to talk racing and get inside the head of a driver. We give them the opportunity to do that. They can sit on a beach, they can stroll on the beach, spend the night in a hotel room, have dinner. This is a great thing. You can go up to the driver's room, they hold all calls, you order a late night snack.
See, okay, but I'm just saying a lot of these sound like a man and a guy, or a man and a woman going on a date.
No, this is what two people do when they're having a really good time, believe me. But who says only men and women can do it? Racing fans want to have fun too, Phil.
All right, Paul Tubby Lane is with us. The promotion is called Dinner with a Driver. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. I don't follow NASCAR as closely as you do, Paul, being a former driver, but is this something the NASCAR fan is going to enjoy?
This is how we like to spend our time, Phil. That's right.
Talking racing?
Talking racing, spending time together one-on-one with men like yourself.
And you know, I know that you think a lot of this sounds gay about wanting to walk on the beach with a NASCAR driver. Let me explain something. They used to run part of the Daytona 500 on a beach. So to walk on a beach at night with your favorite driver is total NASCAR. That is the heart and soul of NASCAR.
All right, Paul Lane with us. The promotion is Dinner with a Driver. You go out with your favorite NASCAR driver. You have a dinner, which includes wine, a candlelit dinner with wine, and then you're driven by a limousine to the beach. Here's what I don't understand. So you're walking on the beach?
You're walking on the beach? Well, it's just everybody loves to go to the beach.
I know, but see, you're walking on the beach with another guy, and then you're sitting on...
But again, you're intimating that this is some kind of a gay thing. You need to understand what we're talking about here, Phil. You said you're not really, don't follow NASCAR, right?
No, sir, I don't. I like to watch the races, but I'm not that...
Well, the dedicated NASCAR fan knows what I'm talking about. We love our drivers so much that we don't have any problem spending time with them, getting alone with them, getting inside their heads, getting away from the wife, getting away from the kids, just two men together. It doesn't matter where. It can be on the reason why we're on a beach is because it's remote. Nobody can get to you. And you can tell your grandkids that you spent a night in the same hotel room with Jeff Gordon, or you spent a night in the same hotel room with Dale Earnhardt Jr., and they'll look up to you forever. And we have used many consultants to find out what the male NASCAR fan would like, and this Dinner with a Driver package is hitting the target.
It is.
It hits the total target. We did research after research. We did focus group after focus group. And what they want more than anything else is to have dinner with their favorite driver, to be alone with him. And I don't mean, you know, not to see you always go romantic. And
no, I'm not going romantic. It's just to be alone with them to talk racing.
That's right. And we also put out the question, would you like to spend the night in their hotel room with them? And the answer came back, yeah, we could talk racing. So I think you need to understand that, Phil.
All right, 1-800-449-8686 is the number to call. I know we have a lot of NASCAR fans listening to our show, and since you did the research, I guess it would be pointless of me to ask them what they think of this.
Well, it kind of is, Phil, because they can call in and agree with me and say that I'm right, but I don't think you're going to get too many people saying that I'm wrong.
All right, well, I want to kind of access them, too. Dinner with a Driver. You are picked up in a chauffeured limousine, taken to a restaurant, a wine list, candlelit dinner. Then you're driven to a beach where you sit on a blanket, take a walk on the beach with your favorite driver, talk racing. Then they take you back to the hotel. You spend the night at the hotel, if you want, in the driver's room.
Well, it's a suite, so there's plenty of space.
All right, so you're spending the night in the driver's room. They hold all calls. I don't know what that means.
Again, you have to understand, NASCAR fans like to talk racing, and they don't want to be disturbed or interrupted. You don't want some wife running in. You don't want some kid coming in. Just two men getting into the heads of each other about racing. And so what that means is, yeah, you hold all calls.
You hold all calls, and then the next day, you are given a memento or a keepsake.
That is correct. It's a NASCAR pin, and it's just a little, you know, it's nothing big. It's just a little pin that says you had dinner and you know, spent the night with, or you spent some time with your favorite NASCAR driver.
Paul Tubby Lane, our guest on the Phil Henry Show, Dinner with a Driver, a brand new promotion that he's hoping to sell to NASCAR, in which you can have dinner with your favorite NASCAR driver. It's for men only, and this is the interesting and, I guess, unique part. It's for men only. You have a candlelight supper, wine, a walk on the beach, a blanket, and then you spend the night in the driver's hotel. But it has nothing to do with sex. It's about enjoying racing. And again, I don't know anything about this, so it's an education for me. 1-800-449-8686. You NASCAR fans probably know more about what he's talking about. This is the Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. FUBAR. The Phil Henry Show is back.
With Paul Tubby Lane from NASCAR, or used to drive NASCAR.
Yes, sir, I did.
What? So you were a competitive racer?
Yes, sir, I was.
Okay, and you sound like you're in a garage right now?
Actually, Phil, where I'm at is a
We're in a shop class here at Newton High School, where I live, just outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and this is a body shop class. It's also a welding class. The students are involved, and I come here once a week and give them some pointers, talk to the class about different things.
So you, as a former driver, how'd you get into promotions?
Well, I felt that I had done everything I could on a NASCAR circuit. I got out of driving simply because I didn't find it to be as competitive as it could be, so I wanted it to try to promote the sport and let people know, you know, that the sport was here. Not a lot of people do. But I also know that the sport's got a lot of problems, so I try to improve the sport itself.
You didn't find it all that challenging as a driver?
No, sir, I didn't. I thought...
Well, when were you driving? Who were some of the contemporaries?
Well, I drove against Buddy Baker. I drove against Sterling Martin. I drove against, Bill Elliott, people like that, even the tail end there of Donnie Allison's career, you know, and it just was nowhere. It was boring and dull, so I decided I'd get into...
It was nowhere, huh?
It really was. So I decided that I'd get...
Were you beating these guys?
Well, sure, I did on a regular basis. So, you know, drivers don't quite have the guts and the glory like the old days, so I'm trying to inject a little of that back into the sport. And Dinner with a Driver, I think, will do it.
All right, we're back, and we're talking about Dinner with a Driver, a unique way to get involved with a driver on a one-on-one basis. You say, according to research, the NASCAR fan needs that.
Well, the average NASCAR fan needs to know that, for some reason, Phil, the average NASCAR fan needs to know he measures up. The only way he can really feel that he measures up is if he can sit down and actually break bread and have a drink with his favorite driver. Otherwise, he doesn't feel he's as much of a man. So we allow him to go out in a one-on-one situation, have the driver sit down, a glass of wine. They can kind of stare at each other across the table. It's up to the NASCAR driver to make his fan feel confident, and I think they can do that. So they light the candles. These two men will stare across the table at each other, and sometimes they'll just reach out and hold hands and talk about the great races that they've been to and the great things that they've seen. Because the fan and the driver, maybe the driver can learn something from the fan. The fan can say, man, I saw you race at Darlington, and you messed up. Let me tell you how you could do it better. And the driver will take notes. And then after the...
You're saying they're reaching across the table and holding hands?
No, they're not. See, again, you want to inject...
No, I'm not injecting anything. You said...
No, they just shake hands like men do. You know, they'll sit down, have a glass of wine, shake hands. When dinner is over with, the chauffeur will then take them over to a remote beach, and there's a view of the city. They can sit in their car and have a drink and stare at the lights. See, I think that... Why should men and women be the only ones that have that much fun? I think NASCAR drivers and NASCAR fans should.
I don't know.
You know, touching a hand or a shoulder is a way to impress a point, too, Mr. Henry. It's not about, I want to be I want to be your love bitch or something like that.
I know that, but I'm saying I don't get it how two guys together on a beach talking about racing, it ain't adding up. It's just not adding up.
Well... Then you just don't know what NASCAR is all about.
I thought it was going to the track and watching the race.
No, no, that's just part of it. That's just part of it. NASCAR is about much, much more. You can't just go to the race. You got to get inside the head of the driver. He needs to get inside your head. Spend time as much as you can. Go places together. That's what we're trying to do. There's no connection at all right now between the fan and the driver. And there used to be a NASCAR. It used to be a wonderful time when...
Well, I mean, I've heard Richard Petty say he used to sit on the hood of his car and sign autographs.
Yeah, you don't have that anymore. The fan and the driver are completely separated and don't have no connection no more. What I'd like to do is get them together, have drinks together, share a walk on the beach. Then there's a great place they can have some, And again, I guess you're going to make fun of this, but there's a place they can go dancing or...
Well, I don't understand how two guys that are talking about stock car racing are going to go dancing.
No, they'll dance if they want to just go and dance alone and talk to the other guy.
How does that work?
To give an example, now again, you want to interject something homoerotic.
Well, no, I just want to know, how does it work? Two straight guys who are NASCAR fans, one of them's a driver, one of them's a fan, and they go to a dance place... They're not dancing with each other.
No, they are not.
So how are they communicating?
What they do is, if they get a table close enough to the dance floor, one guy will get up and dance and keep talking to the other guy while the other guy's sitting there having a drink.
And they'll talk that way?
Yes, sir. What seems to be the problem? Again, talk to your average NASCAR fan. They understand this. That's why at the end of the night, when the NASCAR driver and the fan get together, they'll hug. But you want to put everything sexual on it, and it's not.
At the end of the night, they'll hug.
Yeah, they will. Sometimes, for instance, if they will spend the night in a hotel room, then one of them will fall asleep on the couch, and the driver will get in behind, and just as friends do, just as a friend would. That's what friends want to know about the drivers, are they regular guys. When a fan lays his head on a driver's shoulder, they can really communicate on a different level about the sport. They're sitting there. One may fall asleep with his head on the other's shoulder. No other sport in America allows the fan to have this kind of interaction with their favorite stars.
Laying on a couch, taking a nap together.
And I guess you think that's gay. You know something, Mr. Henry?
No, man. Not at all.
You know something? I was told that your program did a serious discussion that...
Yeah, we do, man, but it's...
Look, what's wrong to share a breath with another man? Nothing wrong with that. And then, when they wake up, go into the bathroom, shower together. It's really great.
All right, well, listen, you NASCAR fans out there, if you'd like to have dinner with and shower with your favorite driver, but you have to be a man, this is not open to women.
No, sir, it is not. We don't want any women around bothering us and asking the stupidest questions in the world. And, you know, how come your car's painted like that? Now, Jesus H, just get out of here. Let us sit down and talk racing, one-on-one, with our arms around each other. And again, NASCAR fans are so intent on talking about racing, you don't want to lose a minute. That's why they shower together.
So they get into the shower together, but that's not sexual either.
No, sir, it's not. No, it is not.
So two men nude in the shower in a hotel room, but they're talking racing.
That is exactly right. And if you try to make it something gay, I'll sue you, because this is a very legitimate promotion. One of the other things, again, the fan will rub some lotion on the driver's back before a race, help put on his flame retardant suit. That kind of thing. It's very, very healthy.
All right, Paul, good luck with this promotion called Dinner with a Driver, where you can have a candlelight dinner and then stay the night in the hotel room with a driver, rub oil on his back and shower with him. But hey, there's nothing sexual about it at all.
If you're making fun of me, so help me God, I'll sue you.
I'm not making fun. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Pure exhibitionism.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
We had Chris Norton on our show the other day, and he was... Are you there?
Yeah, are we going to...
No, I'm all done interviewing you.
All right, can I... You're all done.
Yeah, I'm going to move on now and do another bit.
Well, I want to tell people about how they can, you know, rub oil on their face.
Oh, get out of here with your stupid-ass bit. Rub oil on your favorite driver. Anyway, here is a bit from Chris Norton. He was on the other day to say that he's found a great woman. He's found a beautiful woman. She's a model, but she does have a baby, and the baby is getting in the way of the good sex that they have. And a lady called in to say basically that Chris is a meathead.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
Chris.
Yes, ma'am.
I just have a comment for you. I'm secretly hoping that you're joking about all this, because if you're not, you're the biggest idiot I have ever had the pleasure of coming across in my entire life.
Ma'am, I love this woman very much, and her daughter
You don't love her. If you don't even love her...
In the picture.
Listen, you do not love this woman. You love yourself.
No, ma'am.
But here's another thing.
Everybody should love themselves.
Well, I think you love yourself a little more than anything else. That's what it sounds like. But listen, here's another thing.
Easy for you to say, ma'am.
This is an 18-month-old baby, and you're worried about stimulating conversation? Listen, I think your intellect is probably that of an 18-month-old, but I really can't believe that you have such expectations of a baby. You really know what you need to do?
No, I'm just saying. She's 18 months old. She doesn't say anything.
Well, we said that.
You know what?
That's the point. That's the point of what I'm saying. The kid's too young to see you have a kid.
Well, then, you
can't
understand. Like the kid,
you can't understand.
Listen, there's no hope for your relationship. You don't like her kid. And if this woman, this model, has any sense, she'll see right through that after you guys go out on a few more dates.
Well, but I mean, we've been going out for 4 months, and I do provide her with good sense. Because she's a model.
Provide her with what?
With good sense.
Oh, God, good sense. I know you must be joking. You sound like such a meathead. But listen, let me just make one last comment.
I have not called you one name, and all you've done is insult me.
I know.
I'm saying...
You're right. That's not fair of me to do that, but I am so angry right now.
Well, let me say this, okay? First of all, what's wrong with approaching her ex-husband man-to-man and say, take the kid back, when the kid's older... Then you can have the kid back.
You know what? Listen, it's not your place to do that, for one thing. But the other thing is, why? What kind of a mother would allow some kind of transaction to go on with her child?
Let me jump in here. The ex-husband, you'd be lucky if you got out of there alive. I mean, no ex-husband's going to hear from some boyfriend that he's never met before about taking custody of his kid back.
Well, actually...
With all due respect, I don't think you sound... No, I shouldn't say it, but are you hot?
Oh, please. No, listen.
Ma'am, let me just tell you one thing. I love this woman very much, and
if you think love is something to be bad,
then that's bad. Any woman
dates a man who doesn't love her child, then you two are made for each other.
No,
but let me
I'm
tell
being
you one
honest
last thing.
With
one
I'm being thing. Honest with her. I don't like her kid. And
well, then, you know what? She'll dump you. I really hope she dumps
or,
you. But
or
you know what I hope
give
happens?
The kid back.
You know what you should do? You know what you should do? Go talk to her ex-husband man to man, and I hope he kicks your ass.
You know something, ma'am? If that kid, you hear your kid in the background right now?
Yeah.
You know what I would love to do is take it and just throw it.
Oh, I'm sure you would, Mr. Violent Californian.
Oh, okay, dumbass Floridian. Why don't you go hump another alligator?
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
Okay, Chris. Chris Norton, that available on our website, philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com, along with other treasures. Just go to our audio archive with a backstage pass. You can purchase for $6.95 when you log on. Follow the links. Follow the Yellow Brick Road right to that place where you can get yourself, you know, the whole thing. 1-800-449-8686. The top 10 ugly cars. Top 10 ugly cars as judged by somebody. Who? MSN? Microsoft Network? Okay. Top 10 ugly cars. Did people vote on this? We don't know. The Rolls-Royce Phantom. Oh, well, yes, of course. The Rolls-Royce Phantom. I won't buy it. I just refuse to buy it because it's so ugly. Rummy former Soviet leaders used to motor around in Zill staff cars, themselves poorly executed copies of 50s-era Packards, will get their orders in early squinty-eyed and flat-faced with a front end that looks like the leading edge on an executive slumber series casket sliding out of a hearse. This is one six-figure car that's worth paying a fortune to get rid of. The Rolls-Royce Phantom. Ever tell you the time I saw a guy driving a Rolls-Royce into the drive-thru at Jack in the Box? And I thought to myself... Look, pal, we know you have a Rolls, and I know you're back in the hood to impress your homies. You look like an idiot. That car looks stupid wrapped around you. And pulling into Jack in the Box, oh my God. Yeah, you're just one of the regular folks. You're just Jenny on the block, ain't that it? But did anybody tell her before she made that song what a big mistake she was making? Because all I've ever heard anybody do is make fun of her. All I've ever heard anybody do is make fun of the fact that she ain't Jenny on the block, that when she goes back to the Bronx or Harlem or whatever garbage can she came out of, that nobody, you know, she can't get close to her. She's got bodyguards everywhere. She's driving around in an Escalade. She's still Jenny on the block. What does that mean? It's still $20? I'm sorry. That was uncalled for. Number two ugliest car, the Chevy Avalanche. An involuntary upward surge of stomach contents. An avalanche often accompanies a first-time encounter with this 4x4 Frankenstein. All it's missing are electrodes and the plastic-covered quarter panels. The Pontiac Aztec, a dumpster with headlights. The Cadillac CTS, a praying mantis meets Judge Dredd props. Well, they say they were the top 10 ugly cars, and here's the next one is the BMW 745. Anybody know what these cars look like? The Toyota Echo, the Infiniti Q45, the Hummer H2, and finally the Subaru WRX. Now, the Hummer H2 is the smaller Hummer, am I right? And the appeal of that car is beyond me. Now, I don't know how many it seats. I know the big Hummer seats four. It's got a huge-ass transmission, and it's just it's a joke to see somebody in one of those now, isn't it? You see a guy driving down the street in a Hummer, and you sort of snicker to yourself. Who does that guy think he is? Jesus, I mean, okay. General Franks, we'll get out of the way, sir. Wow. He's coming down the road in a Humvee. Better clear out. Who knows? A machine gun may come out of the top of that thing, and then we're all in for it. And remember the whole kick with Hummers on weddings? You know, people driving those on weddings?
We got married. It's just kind of a shtick thing. But Eddie, you know, he rented a Hummer.
Okay. Yeah, I know. You got out of the Hummer. And the Hummer limo? Or how about the Navigator limo? Let's spend billions. Our kids went to their, a prom 2 years ago. And we all took pictures of them. And the kids all pitched in, and they got a limo, because they wanted to ride around in a limo. And this thing pulls up, and it's a Navigator limo with the sign on the side of the thing that says, you know, Harvey's Limo Service, call for special rates. You know, there is a point where riding in the limo becomes completely meaningless if you've got a sign on the side that says, Ed's Limo Service, call now, we speak Spanish. It just all of a sudden is not the unique ride that you thought it would be. May I make a suggestion to all you fine limo services out there? Of course, maybe you're getting business off those signs. I don't know. I personally would never, ever hire any limousine service were I in the need for one with a sign on the side that says, Charlie's Chow Mein and Limo. Call now, 2-for-1, deal and ride home. Ed's Chow Mein Limo Service, Chinatown. Pull up at the red carpet in front of our store. You'll know us by the red carpet and smiling Charlie Chan out the front door there.
Ah, want to get a limo service?
Jesus.
It's a Chow Mein limo service.
What do you mean, limo service?
Oh, making fun of our accent, huh? You freaking racist mob. Forget it. You lacist?
I'm a lacist? I want to get in a limo and I'm a lacist.
That's right.
You know, so the kids, they spent all this bread and off they went. You know, the kids, so what do they care? They don't know the difference. I had to tell him when he got home, I go, dude, next time, get a limo. Well, never mind. Because the girl he was with, she sucked, so he didn't want to waste any more money on her than he had to. I don't want to get into it. Let me just put it this way. When the poor guy got home, he told us that she had said to him she was really interested in some other guy, but she accepted his date to the prom. Can you believe that? Poor cat. I said, don't worry about it, dude. Some girls like some young guys, but some girls, there's a word for them, son. And he said, what? I said, it's called bitch. A no-count, two-bit whore. And as you get out of the car, and she's walking to the door, say,
whore.
What? Nothing, I don't know what that was. I think there's an owl on top of your chimney. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Well, what happened to the thing? I had pictures of the ugliest cars. Well, never mind. There is a news story here about the Dixie Chicks last night. We're in Greenville, South Carolina. Everybody had a good time. And who gives a crap, right? Who cares? And I don't. The fact that that became a big thing in the first place is astounding. Or not that it became a big thing, that anybody thought it was actually going to hurt their career. That's what I wanted to say. No, it's not going to hurt anybody's career. They may sound stupid saying it, but you got to understand something. Being stupid and being a celebrity, this is a, you know, the two go hand in hand, baby. Saying dumb stuff and being a celebrity, and by celebrity I mean well-known person, actually I shouldn't say, entertainer, and saying stupid stuff goes hand in hand. Musicians, but the Dixie Chicks getting up on stage and saying what he said is cool because Springsteen does monologues from the stage. It's just, it's dumb stuff, that's all. So anyway, what they did was they had a great show, and then apparently there was an alternative concert 30 miles away in Spartanburg with the Marshall Tucker Band. Oh my God. The alternative concert held 30 miles away in Spartanburg. So if you're against the Dixie Chicks, go and see the Marshall Tucker Band. And those guys haven't had a record out in, what, 106 years? And it was like the anti-Dixie Chick thing? Guys, wrong move. Wrong move. All right. Places to make love. Yes, if you're running out of new and interesting places to make love, try these, according to LovingYou.com users. In a public restroom. In a movie theater. In a public restroom. To quote the great Lenny Bruce, I can't imagine going into a public restroom and doing anything other than urinating and leaving. In a movie theater. On a soft rug near the fireplace. Well, who hasn't done that? I think I've done it. I've imagined I've done it. You haven't done it yet, Mark? You are married, dude. Oh, you need the fireplace, though, don't you? Yeah. On a secluded island beach. I did. Is it not good of me to say these things? Oh, I'll say it. What the hell? Marie and I did in Fiji. They had a little island down there you could take a boat to. Let me tell you all about it. No, anyway, in the woods right after it rains. Yeah, that's great, especially if there's no blanket. Just lay right on the wet leaves. Huh? On a train in the middle of the night. Next time you take a train ride, when'll that be? You gonna get on that wine train up north? On a train in the middle of the night. On a motorcycle. In bed with silk or satin sheets. In a bed with very heavily stained sheets. In a bed with filthy sheets. Make love after not showering for 3 days. That's fantastic. It's just you don't know what you're missing. In your love's room while their parents are home. In the rain. In the woods on a blanket. On a yacht during the full moon. In the ocean. I did that when we were on that island. Well, never mind. On a trampoline. On top of a hill. On a bed full of rose petals. Stop it. It's not just about women. It's about guys, too. In the middle of nowhere, in the car in heavy traffic, that's pretty cool. In a hotel, never done that, have you? Get out of here in a hotel. Maybe in the hotel lobby. Try it in the hotel lobby. In a barn full of hay, in an open field at night, on the rooftop, under a waterfall, in your partner's bed, in the garage. That's a good one. On a jungle gym at a park at night with lots of children around. In the car going through an automated car wash with the windows open. On your patio or balcony on a starry night right under a neighbor's window that's open so they can hear all the grunting, howling, moaning, and choking. In the mountains of Colorado. On an abandoned airfield. On an abandoned minefield. In an abandoned strip mining ditch. Under the full moon in the wet grass, in an alley behind a rendering plant. By the way, if you just joined us, these are all great places to have sex. on a blanket on the bank of a lake in St. Patrick's Cathedral. I'm kidding. In an elevator on the bathroom floor. Who hasn't done that, huh? In your partner's parents' room. In a sauna. In a very big bed. At a ball game. On a construction site. On a subway. On a bus. In an alley. In other words, anywhere where you would naturally go to the bathroom. Anywhere that you would stop to relieve yourself is also a great place to make love. Bathroom, tree, ditch, vacant lot, litter box. There you have it, man. From lovingyou.com. Love, life, and romance, baby. It doesn't get any better than that. Lovingyou.com. One of the things that I know for a fact, I ain't got nothing in common with most of these people that they poll concerning sexual habits. Because when I was single, it was rare indeed for me. I got to a point where I was so bored with sex that I'd rather stay at home and read a good book. That if my girlfriend, this is when I was single with, like, my last girlfriend, if she walked in front of me in stockings with the garter belt, with the, you know, with everything, with a teddy, whatever, and she was gorgeous too, I'd just tell her to get out of the way of the TV set because the game's on. But that's totally normal, isn't it? You mean it's not? Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
The author of a new book, 300 Years in This Country, Margaret Gray. Why did you write this book, ma'am?
Phil, I wrote this book because, and it's a very good question, I wrote this book because I noticed increasingly that there were individuals in this country, I don't think, who were raised properly. My family has been in this country for 300 years, and yet you can go to a party, you could go to a film festival, you can go to any function where you just meet people and talk, and people give you an argument about things. I'll give you an example. I was at a party the other night with Madeline Reed from Fox. She's talking to me about what a great job Bush did, and I looked at her and I said, excuse me, my family goes back 300 years in this country. We are related, Phil, as you know, to Paul Revere. And I said, among other people, and I said to her, I think I know what I'm talking about. And yet what happens? More and more people are empowered to argue with you, even when you have family that has won Nobel Prizes, family that is among some of the most prestigious in the history of the country. My great uncle fought at Gettysburg. He was an army captain. I have family that is related to Dr. Frederick Banting, who won the Nobel Prize, Thomas Edison. We're very proud of this, and I tell my son, Jason J. Delmonico, about his heritage. And this is the thing that amazes me during the war. We got these arguments.
All right. So to just recap, people were arguing with you during the Iraq War?
Yes, and I know you were pro-war, Phil, and I don't want to debate the war.
Neither do I.
But the fact of the matter is, my family has been in this country since the 1600s, and yet when I said something at a party the other night that was being given for Jim Stowe, who is a wonderful, wonderful special effects man over at MGM, and I said to a group of people, I said, Bush is a war criminal. And they started arguing with me. And I looked at them and I said, oh my God. My family has been in this country for almost 300 years.
And they're arguing with you.
And they're arguing with me, yes. When does the indecency stop? When do the insults stop? We are related distantly to Paul Revere. Maybe you've heard of him.
All right. I of course I've heard of him. But I wanted to ask you, because you are related to Paul Revere, because you have family that's been in this country, don't you think, though, that you need to convince people with argument, not necessarily your lineage?
Phil, the lineage is the argument. So many people love to tell you how American they are. My family is more American than any of them. Now, Phil, I don't want to be disrespectful. Your family's recently moved here, isn't that right?
My family came here from Canada in 1949.
All right. So I really don't think you have any right to argue with me about these issues. When you go through our family album, it's like walking through a hall of honor. The name's Sherman. You know the name Sherman.
William Tecumseh?
Yes. And that's why I say I think I know what I'm talking about. In fact, I was at a conference in Atlanta about American policy, and I was talking with Louise Nathan, who's a distant relative of Robert E. Lee. And you talk about stupid. She was so uninformed. So you see, the Union won the war, Phil, and the Union won, in some respects, the argument the other day. As a relative of Sherman's, destroyed a relative of Lee's over a creme brulee and a port at the Vickery.
All right, 1-800-449-8686 is our number. Margaret Gray is the author of 300 Years in This Country, the name of a new book in which she outlines an idea that you have that people who go back a long way in this country should have some extra say in the running of the country?
No, this is what my theory, Phil, this is what we're proposing, really, and this is what we would expect. What I am proposing is a body of people who can advise the president, the Congress, and the judiciary from time to time, made up of people whose families just didn't fall off of a raft, who have strong and old roots embedded in this nation, who know what it's really like to be American.
But, Margaret, the idea of America is that all people are equal, and there is no entitlement when it comes to having a say.
Phil, America is in a dangerous time. And there are first and second generation Americans that are not simply capable of making these decisions. Now, there, I said it.
Well, you realize what you're saying.
Well, that's fine. I said it. I know it isn't pure democracy, but it is a Band-Aid until we get the democracy that we have fixed. And
so you propose some advisory body made up of people whose families have been in the country for a long, long time.
I'm saying that this country needs the perspective of individuals like me. My family's been here, Phil, since the 17th century. That's the 1600s. I think I know what I'm talking about. And I don't need someone giving me an argument at a party about the criminality of America's conduct in Iraq.
Well, I will argue with you regardless of your lineage, because...
Well, then you'd be stupid. I'm American, pure and simple. Are you?
Yes, I am. I was born here in 1952, born and raised.
But the people came over the line of... What did they do? Come over in a car or what?
Yeah, from Canada, yeah, you generally come over in a car.
Well, Phil, I'm not trying to be argumentative.
What you're basically saying is, the longer your family's been in this country, the more of a right you have to advise its leaders.
I am sick and tired of not having people respect the fact that I am related to Paul Revere. This is a man that rode a horse that warned the Americans of the British attacking. I'm related to William Tecumseh Sherman. You know what he did, don't you? He burned Atlanta to the ground, and I'm very proud of that. The industrial center of the Old South, he burned to the ground. They'll never forget that in Atlanta. I'm also related to Thomas Edison.
Now, on what side of your family?
This is both my mother and father.
All right.
You know what he did? He was a genius inventor. So therefore, why do I have to listen to someone give me their opinion? You see what I'm saying? In other words...
So they should not be allowed to give an opinion?
I'm not saying that. But I don't have to stand and listen to it. And more at parties, I will be saying something like, well, you know, I really think that... I think the United Nations is a very good thing. And someone will say, well, they didn't back us up. And I'll look at this person and I'll say, do you know who you're talking to?
Yeah.
And they'll say, no, I'm sorry. My family has been in this country longer than yours. And you can tell because they're Cuban or there's something like that. And I'll say, and I'll thank you to keep your mouth shut when I am giving an opinion about this nation. We don't need your first-generation immigrant opinion just yet.
Well, that's anti-immigrant.
No, it is not, Phil. It is...
No, that's anti-immigrant. It's something this country's been fighting for a long time.
No, it is not. It's educating the immigrant. Because the immigrant to America is like the child. Don't speak unless you're spoken to.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Should people whose families have been here for 300 years, like Margaret's, whose families have roots that go back centuries in this country, people who are related to distant great Americans, in the case of Ms. Gray, Paul Revere, and Thomas Edison, and William Tecumseh Sherman. Our number is 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. We're talking to Margaret Gray about her book, 300 Years in This Country, and should those folks have a special place advising the president? We'll be right back on The Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Born again.
And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
With Margaret Gray, author of 300 Years in This Country. Your family's been here 300 years. You have a bloodline to Thomas Edison, to Paul Revere, to Nobel Prize-winning Dr. Frederick Banning. You have a bloodline to William Tecumseh Sherman and two uncles that fought at Gettysburg. And because of that, you feel that you are entitled to advise the president more than someone who is the average voter.
Phil, I'm really sad that I have to explain this to you. My family is related to Francis Scott Key. Now, let me tell you...
I know who Francis Scott Key is.
Yes, well, hold on for a minute. Francis Scott Key wrote The Star-Spangled Banner. And you're going to sit there at a party and tell me all about America and its foreign policy. Well, I've got a big news flash for you. Nobody sits there and talks to me about foreign policy when I'm related to the man that wrote the national anthem. Jesus! I can't believe the presumption of people.
All right. I have respect for your family lineage. I hope that you understand that I'm trying to say maybe we don't need this committee. 1-800-449-8686. Here's Kim. Go ahead, Kim.
Hi, this sounds like a nepotism at its finest. I guess we'll make her queen next since she gets inherited. My point
no,
is
no, I didn't want to be queen.
Well, okay,
I've not
I
said anything
say,
like that.
Or are you going to talk over
well,
me the whole
you
time?
Just said something that was insulting. And
it
I
is insulting,
right to...
but you've just insulted me, and let me tell you why.
What did I say
because
to you?
I don't care about your heritage. I care what you personally may have accomplished that allows you to make that decision.
I am talking
about
my accomplishments.
That is what makes a difference. Not your ancestry. And by the way, my ancestry is Cherokee. I've had relatives on this continent for more than 10,000 years.
Another person who claims to be
Indian. Maybe we'll do it by a weighted margin if you're so up to that, so that we can say, okay, we'll give them the say. Because my personal opinion is that everybody's vote counts, not just who you get to decide counts. Who are you to tell anyone else that their opinion is not valid?
Well, first of all, everyone that claims to be part Indian are a real joke because most people are not. Everyone loves to say they're part Indian, though, Phil. I love to hear that. Number
well,
two,
my
oh,
ancestors
minute,
are on the Dow Rolls. I guess I would know.
They're on and the what? On the Dow Rolls?
Oh, okay. Why don't you find out what those are first, since obviously your American history
Look,
is not
if
as
there's some
as you
carving
think.
In a tree, I'm sorry. We keep records on computers. And I will tell you that...
You sound a little condescending to this lady, Ms. Gray. I would hope that you listen to what she's saying. Okay?
No, apparently not. Apparently her opinion is the only one that counts.
Well, do you
talk
have...
Talk about an elitist.
All right. My relative is Thomas Edison. Now, what Indian...
Wonderful!
What Indian
Say
made
what?
A light bulb? What Indian made a light bulb?
No Indian made a light bulb. I'm
Thank
so sorry,
you.
But what,
Thank
did you,
you
make a light bulb?
Thank
did you,
you
make a light bulb?
Yes,
no,
I did. Yes,
you
I did.
Make a light bulb.
Yes, I did.
How did you,
you
make
made
a light?
Light bulb?
How did you make one?
Because Thomas Edison did, and his blood is in my veins. That's
and
the
what
point.
Have you done?
I'm telling you, I did all of that.
So you were on a horse riding through...
Because their blood... Yes, their experience is my experience. My family planted the first crop of corn in North America.
No, the Indians
no,
planted corn.
They most
How did they do that?
They... I beg
the
your pardon.
The corn was already here.
I'm talking about a white man. I don't know what you're talking
oh,
about.
Oh, excuse me, a white man. I guess America didn't exist... This continent didn't exist
exactly.
until Europeans invaded.
Exactly.
Thank you so
no,
much.
Wait, no, I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying
that, that's right.
My
you're
family...
not. You're just telling me my lineage is not as important as yours.
No, no, I'm not. I'm saying but my family planted the first crop of corn that people will remember and that matter. That's all I'm saying.
I remember my heritage. Thank you very much.
Okay, when did your family plant the first crop of corn? Aha, you don't
there
remember.
There is no written history. It's that wrong.
And do you know why there's no written history?
Because
they didn't
we
have
did
ballpoint pens.
I know. Do you know?
Yes,
because
I do know.
Ours is an oral heritage. We did not, until there was a written alphabet for the Cherokee,
but Phil,
what? It was all an oral heritage.
What the lady's
is my heritage
saying is
less they, important because I didn't write it down?
This, what the lady's saying is they didn't know how to write.
Well, they didn't need to write, is what she's saying.
Oh, yeah, sure. Look.
Look, but Ms. Gray.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, what
do you listen to yourself?
I
you are
the
such
Indian.
A hypocrite.
I'm a hypocrite.
You sit there and talk about how you are just, you know, so much about this nation. You don't know anything about this nation. This nation was founded on freedom. The people who came here were not a bunch of aristocratic snobs such as you are.
I'm not
a founded this nation. You
we
are
have
a
to begin
snob.
To turn this country over
you
to
are
people
a
whose
snob.
Family's been here a long time. And I'm sorry, your Indian heritage just simply does not count. And the reason for that is very simply this. The Indians don't, they come
Speak
from a
carefully.
Time.
There were 5,000, there were 500 Indian nations here. How many are left? And you know why
well,
there are so few left? Because
nothing,
the Europeans
have...
wiped them out.
Look,
they're extinct.
Indians today, did they invent a wheel? Did they invent anything? No. They invented a peace pipe. That's the only thing. And teepees.
What, now, what are you saying? Are you saying because they
the
did
Cherokee
not contribute anything industrial?
See, you classify us all as one little race,
didn't
as
you
one
wear,
little nation.
You didn't wear feathers.
No, we didn't wear feathers. Do you know where the Cherokee even lived?
In America.
Do you?
In America.
In America.
The Cherokee
in
was
America?
Not, I can, the, wasn't the Cherokee in the southeast?
That's correct.
In Georgia?
In Georgia and what is currently North and South
you.
Carolina.
Why do you know this, Phil?
Because I like to study history.
And do
well,
you know that we have a contract with the United States government that has never been fulfilled? Because we knew that the U.S. government was going
well,
to take our land by force.
Well, get
They
mine.
Took 5 million acres.
Well, get
We signed
mine.
A contract.
Well,
has never
people,
been paid for that money.
Donna,
never.
Get in line of the people who want to sue the U.S. government. Just get in line.
No, nobody gets in line behind
we
the American Indian.
We don't want to sue them. We have no desire to sue them.
If you claim to be Indian, if you claim to be Indian, all right, then you wouldn't mind giving up alcohol.
What does that have to do with anything?
Do
I don't drink. I don't drink
You don't
anyway.
Drink, exactly. And you know why she doesn't drink, Phil?
Why?
Because if Indians drink, they take their underwear off, they throw it.
Yeah, a minute ago,
oh
you didn't believe
God.
That the woman was an Indian. A minute ago, you thought she was lying. All right, listen, Kim, thank you for your call and your contribution. 1-800-449-8686. I don't know what you're trying to do here, but you are saying that your heritage...
What I'm trying to do is educate your audience to the need for people whose families have been here a long time, for the need of those people to advise the president. We don't need any more people who don't have roots in this country doing that.
All right. But there's a woman who's an American Indian. Why can't the American Indians advise the president? They've been here for a long time.
Because they come from over here and not Europe, where all the books and stuff come from.
Where all the books and stuff come from.
Look, Phil, I demand the respect that I deserve as a true American.
I demand the respect that I deserve as a true American.
My family's been here since the 1600, which would be the 15th century.
Well, my family's been here since 1949, which would be the 20th century.
60 stinking
fucking years. Jesus!
All right, fine. Let me go over here to Richard on the Phil Henry Show. Richard, go ahead.
Hey, Phil. I just wanted to let you guys know and your audience know that just listening to this person, I think my IQ is dropped by like 15 to 20 points.
Well,
and it's insulting to
listen
to this person. First of all, it is not an Indian you're talking about. You're talking about a Native American, a person
Indian
that was born and raised in here thousands and thousands of years before you even got here.
The
so their
is
opinion about this land is well
statement.
Way more than yours. And it just appalls me by your intellect. I know that you're a smart person, but to even think as low, you're disgracing your family
name. What
advice
did Indians give us on atomic bombs? Indians didn't have atomic bombs, so what advice are they going to give?
Neither did your family. Way back when, they didn't even know about uranium and plutonium and all those things.
Well,
they didn't even have TVs.
Richard,
that's
you might have
low.
Arrived in America on the turnip truck, but I can assure you, I came in a fully upholstered car. And it is there that I'm going to...
Richard, hold on. Both of you guys hold the line here. We're going to take a break. 1-800-449-8686. We'll get back to Richard and Margaret Gray with her book, 300 Years in This Country. She thinks that people who have families that put down roots a long time in America should comprise a special advisory panel, that they have knowledge, that they have patriotism, that they have roots, that they have a sense of this country that the rest of us do not have. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. We eat kittens.
All right, we're back with Margaret Gray. What were you saying about Native Americans?
Well, the American Indian, Phil, you have to understand, claims to be a Native American. That is the first American. But we have evidence, and it is possible that anthropological evidence exists, that the African was the first person to set foot on North American soil, not the Asian, which, of course, is the continent from which the American Indian, or the Native American so-called, comes from.
The black African,
anthropologically, we have found remnants, if you will, artifacts in the Northwest, and...
What? Like what?
Shoes, things like that, just foot coverings.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Back to Richard. Go ahead, Richard.
All right, well, I really don't find any relevance to that... anything what was discussed earlier. Your main comment was the fact that your lineage is far superior than anybody else's because your family's been here for 300 some odd years.
Well, I'm related
and the only
to
thing it
William
turns
Tecumseh Sherman, among others.
Wow, man, you sound like you're
well,
some,
who are you
like
related
a mutt.
To? Who are you related to?
It really
to?
Doesn't matter, because we're not talking about me today. We're talking about you. You're on the radio.
If the Indians want to be part of American heritage, then they must prove a contribution more than the moccasin. If it weren't for my ancestors, people would still be trying to roll a cart on square
you
rocks.
You don't know that. You
so,
don't know that. The only reason why you don't know that
don't
is
know
because
what?
The European culture came down here and changed it. As they were allowed to change with their own in their own area, the American Indian, or excuse me, the Native American, was not given that same opportunity, and if you really knew
Richard,
your history
I
about
think you've been
that particular
spoken
culture,
peace pipe a little too much.
I'm sorry.
I think you've been smoking the peace pipe a little too much.
No, sir.
First of all,
if someone's smoking a peace pipe, it's actually
first of
you.
All, the Europeans came here and brought cars and breakfast food.
They brought cars back in the 1800s.
They
wow, that's
horses.
Pretty intelligent.
They brought horses.
What else did they bring?
Horses. And guess who started using them? You got it. You and the little papoose people. So,
All right, let's... Enough of this, because it's bordering on racism as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
And
racism against me, yes.
Not against you. What do you mean the papoose people? All right, Richard, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686.
Richard, dear Richard, who do you think gave this country toast? Gave this country the things that...
Well, forget about toast.
I'm saying civilization.
Here is Monty. Hello, Monty. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi, how you doing?
Yes, sir.
I've got a comment for whatever she is.
Whatever
I'm not really, I'm not really concerned about your lineage, ma'am, and I use the word ma'am loosely.
I'll tell you what, I can kick your ass.
Well, I tell you what, I wish you had the opportunity, because I would if I've got.
Spit it out, well, buddy. Come on, you can do it.
Shut up. I've got relatives in my family that did more than invent a light bulb.
All right, so they invented the spill.
Listen, I've got relatives in my family that have gone over and fought in wars that died for your freedom and say stupid.
All right, you're going to have to watch the language, okay? You can't, we can't have one. All right, let's go to...
Get to your point, Monty. Is your family still learning the language? Jesus.
All right. Here is Linda on the Phil Henry Show. Hello, Linda.
Hi there.
Yes.
This is probably one of the most entertaining and absurd guests you've ever had on, and her attitude and her her premise does not reflect anything even remotely related to what the founding fathers founded this country on. They were here escaping the aristocratic stronghold of long lineages, and the fact that she is so enamored of her past is reflective that she does not have a whole lot to stand on her own. She's just hysterical. I mean, you have to laugh at somebody like this because they're
right,
so completely absurd.
I suggest she needs to see a psychiatrist. Are you done?
And a good psychologist
because she is just the most absurd commentator I have ever heard. I don't sit there and look at doilies. Oh, you're very courageous.
Well, she hung up, huh?
Yeah, she hung up. That's the kind of white trash, Phil, that we're sorry we brought to America. If it was just a class of people who knew how to eat food without using their hands, we would all be better off. Unfortunately, we did need indentured servants, and that's where Linda's family comes in. Hello?
I'm here. Doug, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Miss Gray, first off, you're just plain an elitist, plain as simple as that. Your family's been here maybe one generation longer than mine, and doesn't make you any better than me.
So why do you need to bring it up? How long your family's been here?
Well, let's see. One of my distant grandfathers came here before the Revolutionary War and fought in it.
So?
And while you're mentioning about Paul Revere, weren't his parents immigrants or his grandparents immigrants?
So?
So the fact is, nobody's better than anybody else.
Paul Revere is way better than some guy that was related to you. Paul Revere, you know the name, don't you?
Yes, I'm
well
aware.
This man's relative fought in the Revolutionary War, though.
But he wasn't Paul Revere.
Yeah, well, Paul Revere didn't get shot at like my great-great-great-grandfather did.
Paul Revere was arrested by the British. Paul Revere was arrested by the British.
Stop riding on the coattails of your ancestors.
Look, just because you got a picture of your pappy standing next to Sitting Bull doesn't mean anything.
Just
because you're related to...
And who are you to talk, Mr. Henry? You're not related to anybody or anything.
Okay, a few of my great ancestors, if you will, Elihu Embry, an abolitionist in Tennessee.
Little Huey, what's the cartoon character? Hebert Hoover?
Herbert Hoover, President of the United States. George Mitchell, Union soldier out of Indiana.
Excuse me, who was Little Huey?
He was a president. Check your history books.
Huey was a president. There was no president named Huey.
I said Herbert Hoover.
Herbert Hoover.
Well, who was Huey?
I didn't say Huey. Joseph Embry, another Union soldier from the Civil War. These are all people who fought for our freedoms.
William Tecumseh Sherman, another soldier from the Civil War.
That's fine.
Okay. Thomas Alva Edison.
And you know what?
He was descended from immigrants as well. All you're doing is reading names from famous Americans' book. So, you know.
No, I'm reading names out of my ancestral genealogy.
Well, okay? It sounds a little fishy.
Well, yeah, Sounds a little fishy. What do you mean you're related to Thomas Edison, Frederick Banning, Paul Revere, and William Tecumseh Sherman? Those guys are not related.
Well,
I mean, the whole idea that you're saying you're related to these guys, I doubt very much. And you say you had an argument with a woman named Louise Nathan, whose distant relative was Robert E. Lee, and you won?
Yep, kicked his ass again.
Yeah.
Hey, Doug.
Know what?
Doug, I bet you're related to Madonna, too.
If you look at Clinton, he was related to some famous people from history. So are the George Bushes. So are the Roosevelts. So is Churchill.
Exactly, and okay. So am I, and I'm up there with those people.
Well,
Churchill,
you're up there with
Roosevelt,
if you're up there with Clinton,
Churchill,
well, you're
and
in
Roosevelt.
Poor company then.
Oh, and not Churchill and Roosevelt? Thank you.
No, I
thank you.
Now, Teddy
thank
Roosevelt,
you.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
Teddy Roosevelt, yes.
All right, thanks a lot, Doug. Thank you for your call. Ms. Gray, thank you very much. I'm sure your book will sell badly because I don't think you represented yourself very well here today.
I'd like to take more phone calls.
Well, I'm sorry.
I said I want to take another phone call. I've been in this country since the 17th century.
Fine. Tracy, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would just like to tell you that I think you are a racist.
Wrong.
And I know it doesn't matter what I say because
wrong.
You cut down every caller
well,
you
you're
have.
Wrong. You don't, you're wrong. I'm not a racist.
You know what? I think you need to be quiet and let me finish. You have cut down every caller that you have had on that phone.
Because
so you know what? Why don't you shut up?
The 1600s.
You know what? I don't really care. I have family that's fought in the war. I am part American Indian.
What boat did your family come over on?
My family came over in the 1800s.
Oh, get out of here. The 1800s?
Yes. My great-grandmother died here in 1988, and she was well over 100 years old.
You know what you look like to me with your shoes and your bad bag?
Like?
You look like a rube, a well-scrubbed hustling rube. Good nutrition's given you length of bone, but you're not too much far removed from poor white trash.
You know what?
The boys found
what
you,
what
Tracy.
Is, what is your contribution?
The boys found you,
what
Tracy,
is your
with all
contribution?
Their sticky fumblings in the back seats of cars.
What? You
and
know what?
All
then
you could think about
already.
Was getting
what
out, getting away, getting anywhere, getting all the way to the
you have no contribution.
No, she's nuts. No,
you
Tracy.
You had no contribution. If you want to be on a subcommittee for anything, it is about being a United States citizen, and it is about being a patriotic citizen. And you, lady, are not a patriotic citizen. Patriotism is about being united. It is about involving everybody in there, like every culture, every everything. You are so far removed from anything that calls for.
What a rude, rude person. Tracy, I think you made a very good point.
You know what you look like to me?
And you want to know, you know what you want to hear? Let me tell you what my contribution is to my country right now. Right now, I am a cancer care nurse. I am an oncology nurse. I work with people out of all races, all religions, and everything else who are horribly sick. That is what I do. That is my mark that I have left in my lifetime. That is what I go out doing, and I know that I am going out being the best person that I can be, and I am being a true American citizen.
Cancer came from the Indians.
You know what? And there's no other way to, it came over from your European ancestors.
Please watch your language.
You know what you look like to me with your bad shoes and your good bag? You look like a rube.
Good.
A well-scrubbed hustling rube.
Good. You know what? Good.
Good nutrition.
You deserve to come down off of your high horse.
With all the sticky fumblings in the back seats of cars, and all you could do, Tracy, was to dream, to get away, to get out, to get anywhere, to get all the way together.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Jesus, is she psycho. Tracy, thank you for making
some very good points. You're welcome.
What did the farmer do to the lambs, Tracy? She's
just a piece of work.
What did the farmer do to the lambs, Tracy?
She's out of her freaking mind.
You know what you look like to me?
Well, now you're doing the Anthony Hopkins bit? What a freak. My family's been here since the 60s. You know what? If I have to hear that, it's not just her. I hear that from a lot of people. My family goes all the way back to, oh.
You look like a rube.
1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Rather be playing Madden 2003. 1-800-449-8686. The Bill Henry Show is back.
Has it ever occurred to the dumbass journalists that are covering the Palestinian-Israeli crisis that when you go down to an area of the world where a nation is attempting to defend itself against 500 million people that want them all murdered, basically, that, you know, along the way you may get mistaken for an enemy soldier, that you're just making life more difficult for the Israeli troops that are trying to identify who the militants are, all people that wear civilian clothes, who the suicide bombers are, all people that wear civilian clothes. They're trying to create an environment where these suicide bombers feel frustrated and won't want to attempt these attacks. And all while they're trying to do that, you guys are down there filming and interviewing people. And then when you get shot, you wonder why. Why don't the news gathering agencies of the world take a clue and get your ass out of there for a while? Or if you do go there and you do get shot, you don't start screaming about it to the United Nations and war crimes and, oh, what a horrible thing. It's like those guys that got killed in the Iraq war, the journalists, the Al Jazeera cats that were up there. Does anybody really believe that American forces intentionally targeted journalists so that, A, in the newspaper the next day they could get a whole lot of really great publicity about that, and, B, waste ammunition on a news channel that is so one-sided and so laughable that they were giving all of that play to that comical Ali cat, and they didn't like the writing of some guy from Reuters, so they decided to kill him, too? There's writers all over that country that were writing things that might have been negative or might not have been the proper thing to write. You know, they could have killed Geraldo Rivera. Instead, they just kicked his ass out of there for a while. Why didn't they kill him? What you ought to do, if you're in the news gathering business, if you go down to the Middle East, Gaza Strip, the Golan, the West Bank, wherever, you may and you probably will get shot and killed, okay? So tell all of your journalists, whether you work for Time Magazine, LA Times, Fox Channel, CNN, the Food Network, the Home Shopping Network, whatever the big channels are covering the war down there, which I love the way the Food Network has been handling that, by the way. It's great. They're down there, they're cooking brie, they're actually melting brie and making a fondue while missiles land not 500 meters behind them. So it's cool. Hi, everyone. I'm Wolfgang Puck, and today, and, you know, then a suicide bomber walks up and says, could you please help me, sir? Which way to the bus station? Boom. Anyway, tell them all that when they go there, they may die, and they may die slow. And when they do die, they may not be able to find all of them to stick in the can to send back to their loved ones. Why don't they let them know that? And when you guys go down there with a camera, and you're in the middle of a war zone, and you are in the way of troops that are trying to clear an area who've just been fired at, they don't know who is friend, they don't know who is foe, they don't know where the next sniper bullet's coming from, and you clowns are down there with your cameras and your white flags, waving the white flag. Yeah, that's, boy, that'd convince me. Wow, you're waving a white flag. You must not be a Palestinian terrorist. How many times do you think those guys have been shot at by terrorists waving a white flag? Well, it happened in Iraq to our guys. We got the message fast, man. They learned that. They learned that the hard way. And yet I hear about these journalists. They're getting killed. They're getting shot. Another journalist dies, a British journalist. I don't know who he's working for, and I don't know who else is on their way over there, but, you know, take it from me. If nobody wants to tell you, let me just tell you, you're probably going to get shot at, and you'll probably take a bullet someplace, and if you're lucky, you won't die. You a journalist? Be my guest. Go on over there. But the minute you get shot at by an Israeli tank or by an Israeli soldier and you start screaming war crime, listen, stupid, these guys are in a battle to save their country. You cats are going to get on a plane and fly back home and put your fat ass on a jet and fly home and see your wife and go back into the newsroom and go to the copy editor and turn in your stupid, boring, too long story. And you'll leave the theater of combat and you'll be back at your cushy gig pounding it out at your word processor. And when I say pounding it out, I ain't necessarily mean writing a story. You'll just be pounding it. And those guys are still involved in that war. All right, having said that, though, I just love reading all the wonderful dispatches from there. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.